Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
You.
Hi, I'm okay. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Do you have any questions before we get started? Yes.
No. I think I'm fine.
Okay. Did you make it? You made it into the call. All right. That's really good. This is the first time doing a phone interview.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, technology isn't always reliable, so.
Oh, I found that calling into meetings has worked fairly well.
Yeah. Okay. So if you don't have any questions, I don't have to get started.
Well, hold on a second. I got a helicopter flying over. Normally I don't get a helicopter flying straight over, but that time it did. Okay, it's gone. Yes. So you don't have the background noise.
Okay. I'm Madison Williams with the Oklahoma Humanities, and I'm here to talk today with Sandra Alexander about her involvement with the humanities. So to go ahead and start, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a native Tulsan. Actually, I'm the daughter of survivors of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. Grew up in Tulsa, was the first white graduate of Holland Hall School. And I went to Swarthmore College, decided to go to law school, came home, and went to law school at the University of Tulsa. Did a bit of graduate study in regional and city planning, worked in Washington, D.C. for about 4 years, and came home in the end of 1981 and started out practicing law and being a participant in the community in Tulsa and in Oklahoma, and doing various types of volunteer work.
So growing up, what was your relationship with the humanities? Did you love reading? And how did it change as you went through your different areas of schooling?
Well, first off, growing up, it wasn't called the humanities, and so they didn't really explain that to me. But yes, I was always a heavy reader. Had a mom who graduated from college, well, attended college in the 1930s when very few women, especially women of color, went to college. And she had definite ideas about the education of her children. So she started me and my brother, my older brother, Paul, very early in reading. Had to go to the library, had lots of books at home. So it was all about, you know, education was a big thing inside of our family growing up. I didn't as much enjoy studying, quote, history. I enjoyed reading biographies and basically learning history from the perspective of the stories of the people during that particular period of time. But I was always curious, so I was always reading, always had something going on, you know, always checking out things.
So you mentioned that you went into law. What prompted you to make that decision? What you drew you to law?
Well, actually, what happened was I was primarily concerned about and interested in becoming a journalist. I started studying journalism when I was in the seventh grade. And so I had an expectation of actually studying journalism. But part of what came out when I was applying for colleges is that in a certain period of time, as I said, I was about to become the first Black graduate of the private prep school here in Tulsa. And Swarthmore College became interested in me and recruited me to attend their college. And so instead of going to a school that I had been primarily applying to schools to study journalism, I wound up going to a small liberal arts college, top of the line school, highly selective. And basically during the course of my studies, I was a political science major. I was always interested in politics. I kind of thought that as a journalist, that would be the area that I would be interested in. And part of studying political science at Swarthmore included taking courses in constitutional law and jurisprudence. And part of what happened is I became very curious and interested with regard to the law. Coming out of college, the friends I had at that particular point in time, we weren't into actually getting jobs out of coming out of college. So we were actually looking at schools that you graduate study that we could kind of go into. As it turns out, the study of the law, going to law school, is a subject area that you can go into without any, quote, prior preparation. That, you know, there's not a particular course of study that you have to have in college in order to go to law school. There's just an aptitude test that you take. And so leaving Swarthmore, I was either going to go into graduate study in journalism or I was going to go to law school. And I got into law school. So I decided to go to law school. In the course of being in law school, I had no intentions of becoming a practicing attorney. Again, I still had being a journalist on my mind. My model was a journalist by the name of Fred Graham, who worked for CBS News, and he covered the Supreme Court. And so it kind of went, well, yeah, in order to cover the law as a journalist, having credentials of being a lawyer or having a legal education was important. And so that's kind of how I approached law school. But once I was in there, I actually loved just studying the law and everything associated with it. And I had a professor that I worked for. I was her research assistant. She was the first female professor of law at the University of Oklahoma. Her name was Georgina Langman. And through working with her, coming out of law school, I had more of an ambition of becoming a college professor. So that was my intention. So I went off to grad school. You couldn't become a college professor with just a law degree, a Juris Doctorate. You needed another degree. So I headed off for grad school and I was studying regional and city planning. Basically ran out of money and couldn't finish that graduate program. So that's kind of how I wound up working in Washington, D.C. And after that experience, I came home and was just kind of chilling for about 5 years to figure out what I was going to do next.
So how did you get involved with the Oklahoma Humanities?
Well, when I came home from Washington, I was very involved in Republican Party politics. And Henry Bellman was the governor of Oklahoma at the time. That was, you know, the early, mid-80s. At that time, the Republican Party was the minority party in the state of Oklahoma. And because of my involvement, the governor had decided to appoint me to a position on the Oklahoma Human Rights Commission. And that was an appointment that required state Senate confirmation. And the process involved the your home senator would have to present your name for confirmation for the Senate. And when my state senator saw my resume, he said that he would not put my name forward because on my resume, one of the volunteer activities I was involved in at that time was Planned Parenthood. I was on the affiliate board for the Tulsa Planned Parenthood, and I was also about to become a member of the National Board of Planned Parenthood Federation of America. And so all of this was the beginning of Republicans turning against Planned Parenthood after about 50 years of being supporters of Planned Parenthood. So basically, my state senator blackballed me. The governor's office was very upset about that. They were very apologetic to me and wanted me to take an appointment to something. So they were insistent upon finding something that the governor could appoint me to that did not require Senate confirmation. And so he offered me a position on what at that time it was called the Oklahoma Humanities Commission. So I wasn't upset about my senator blackballing me, but the governor's office was. And so I went ahead and accepted that appointment. So that's how I wound up on the Humanities Board. Fell into it and fell in love with it.
What kind of work did you do on the board?
Well, coming with the background that I had and the interests that I had, my approach, being the kind of student that I am, I dig into all the documents and find out everything. And I found out the history of the humanities and what it was all about. And so aside from just being a regular board member, I became very interested in the issues with regard to the governmental funding of the humanities. One of the things that, you know, it's a very interesting board because, you know, you have three types of members. You have the members that are appointed by the governor of the state. You have the academic members. And then you have the community members who are frequently individuals that have been involved in the humanities in their community and therefore wanted to serve on the state board. When I got involved, you know, of course, part of what happens with regard to the funding of a humanities council, a state humanities council, is that under the legislature that created the National Endowment for the Humanities, there's an appropriation of funds from the federal government every year. And what happens is that Oklahoma Humanities Commission, as it was called at that time, was the designated entity to receive the public funds, the federal funds, for the humanities in the state of Oklahoma. So, you know, there's this annual thing about federal appropriations and all that kind of thing, and having, you know, recently left work in Washington, D.C., I quickly fell into saying, hey, I'm up for the lobbying and, you know, working on getting the funding, the annual funding assuring that we, that our members of Congress vote for money to come to Oklahoma to fund the humanities. I found people that were involved in the humanities kind of thought politics was dirty. And so they didn't like the stuff about lobbying politicians and making those kinds of trips. And that was fun for me. So that was the thing that I got involved in.
So your background in politics really helped you focus on something on the board that others didn't really want to do.
Right. Yeah. And basically, I became kind of a leader about that. As I said, I got really interested in that entire process. There was the Federation of State Humanities Council, which is kind of this, like an association that was created to represent and advocate for state humanities councils. They had a board, and I got interested in wanting to pursue in a broader fashion the support of state humanities councils. So I ran for a position on the board of the Federation of State Humanities Council, and that was based in Washington. And so it was the advocacy group for state humanities councils. And so in that particular position, I got more involved in, again, assuring appropriations were made so that the federal funds would come to the state of Oklahoma to support the humanities in Oklahoma.
So once securing these funds for the state of Oklahoma, were you a part of the process that helped give out grants to individual organizations within the state?
Everybody is. Basically, what the council is it is a grant-making entity, but it's also an entity with regard to the support of the humanities in the state of Oklahoma. So part of what happened, you'd have different classifications of things you would support with regard to humanities. So you would report, or you would support scholars, academics who are teaching the humanities in Oklahoma. So part of what you would have is you would have academics in the schools that are located here in Oklahoma that would be doing research on particular subjects that they were teachers of the humanities in schools in Oklahoma. And so they would make applications to the state council for funding to support them while they might be doing research either during the summer, or some of them would take a sabbatical year and have do some research. So they would make grant applications to pay expenses while they're doing research. Might be some travel expenses, might be a stipend. There might be expenses with regard to acquiring items to research, like copies of documents and that kind of thing. And so they make grant applications to the council for their support. The other thing that you would have, well, is also looking at supporting teachers who were in the pre-K through 12, who are, quote, teaching humanities subjects. And so we, some of the projects that we might have was also providing support and additional education and training for the teachers in pre-K through 12 in the state of Oklahoma. And then you'd have just humanities programs that communities might want to put on. One of the interesting ones that was being developed and getting up and running at the time that I joined here in Oklahoma was a thing that was called Let's Talk About It. And in that particular instance, it was based upon your concept of having a book club. But in this particular instance, what would occur is that the council was purchasing books for in a particular subject, particular type of book, just like you would have with regard to a book club. But what would happen is the books would be shipped to the public libraries in the communities. And what individuals in the communities could do is check out the books from their local public libraries. And the thing that made it special with regard to the support of the humanities was the leader of the discussions about the books would be academics here in the state of Oklahoma. So you would have a college professor that would spend an evening with members of the community in the local library leading a discussion about a particular book. And so that was very popular and really intriguing. And part of the thing that was very helpful about that is, people, you say humanities and people don't know what that is. You know, it is one of those things of what is the humanities? And, you know, you start listing literature, you start listing history and jurisprudence. You know, what's a good way of describing what the humanities is? And also, why should a community support the humanities? So running programs like that were one of the great ways of showing on a very local level, hey, this is the humanity, that you get to have a college professor who's going to share with you and encourage you through a book club type review of a particular book. We also took an opportunity with regard to that particular effort. Somebody came to us and looking at the question of literacy and adult literacy issues. And so we created a side of that particular program that was Let's Talk About It for new readers. So, you know, when you were having individuals, adults, when you were addressing the literacy issue in a particular community, that picking books that they could become a part of a book club when reading as an adult has now become a new activity. So it was one of those things of reinforcing the learning about reading and, you know, assisting in this process of maintaining that love of reading and pursuing other subjects. And then we'd have just different programs. Basically, what happens as a board member is the state council is a grant-making entity. And so every year there'd be a call for applications for grants. And, you know, we have different categories that you could apply for assistance from the council. And the important thing that went along with the State Humanities Council is it's not that it's an entity that fully funds something. It's almost that seed that gets other participation, financial participation in these kinds of activities, because part of the grant making required that there be a match, that the applicant would have to raise funds and support for whatever they were trying to do from another source. And therefore, a dollar from the something like Oklahoma Humanities could generate $100 worth of support for someone who's engaging in a humanities-based activity.
So you mentioned that you were the first African-American graduate from Holland School. How did your background, you know, especially in politics and, you know, your identity affect how you worked on the board? Did it, did you bring a new perspective to the board when you joined?
Not necessarily. Part of what happened is when you go to prep school, again, the humanities are going to be something that you're taught, you know, it's part of your social responsibility that you're taught when you're at prep school. So the reality of the matter is in the activities I was getting involved in with the Humanities Council, I was running into people who had been associated with my prep school. That was just kind of a normal, natural type of process. Part of what I may have brought as a Black person to that particular organization is looking more at the opportunities for more people of color to pursue the humanities. You know, one of the things that happens with regard to the arts and humanities, when you get away from this type of public financial support, governmental financial support, is that normally people who are engaged in the humanities or in the arts are dependent upon, quote, patrons, wealthy patrons. People of color may not necessarily be aware of a process that permits them to grow or bring more of arts or humanities programming into the lives of their communities. So if anything that I brought to the council was more of looking at doing more of an outreach to communities of color, and also communicating with communities of color about the opportunity to have support for the things that they're interested in. Oklahoma, with its history of the Native American tribes, one of the important things that happened was that part of what happened with regard to the Native tribes is that the white man would try to get the children to give up speaking their native language. There was the history of the boarding school, that the children of tribes would be taken away from their homes and sent to boarding schools where they were not permitted to speak their natural tribal language in that particular environment, that they were supposed to be assimilated to America and away from the history and the culture of their tribe. So at the time, 80s and 90s, when I was involved with the council, you're getting into a period of time where the native speakers of various tribes were dying off. And so one of the things that we got involved in and we encouraged were the projects with regard to the preservation of the native languages of the various tribes that, were connected here in the state of Oklahoma. An opportunity to support that. An opportunity to also have an honest preservation of the history of those kinds of things, like the boarding schools and how that worked and the impact that it may have had upon the tribes.
How important were the humanities to all these different communities? Do you feel like they were all equally important?
Well, again, that's the whole thing. We don't always know that the thing that you care about is the humanities, the thing that you're interested in is the humanities. How do you explain it? How do you describe it? Ultimately, in my instance, I found that the humanities is where you find the answer to why. When you had little kids and they were always going, why this? You tell them something, why this? That my solution was to say the humanities are where you search out the answers for the question why. It gets you into the history, it gets you into the literature, it gets you into jurisprudence, philosophy, ethics, all of those things. Also inside of the humanities is the basis of lifelong learning. Just as I mentioned, let's talk about it. People are always involved in things like book clubs, but when you turn around and tell them a book club is the humanities, they're surprised. So we haven't been very good about defining what's happened with the humanities. Okay.
Yeah. I'm just writing stuff down, taking notes. So you say that the humanities are a way to find out the why. And you also mentioned earlier that you are one of a descendant of survivors of the Tulsa Race Massacre. Do you think that the humanities are definitely a way for people to explore that topic and learn about it?
Well, actually, that's how it all got started. It's kind of funny. All of the discussions that are going on right now about the race massacre and even generating the discussions, the recognition that's about to take place about the race massacre was generated up from the humanities. That basically what had occurred was Ken Burns had used a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities to do his program about the Civil War. And of course, when the program was televised, you know, it was on the PBS stations. It was addictive. It was before, video recorders. It was scheduled go to TV, and it ran a successive night, and everybody was totally intrigued by all of this. But, you know, the things that Ken Burns does is 100% the projects that he does. He got so many accolades with regard to the program, the Civil War, and then a demand developed for more of those kinds of things, those kinds of projects, those kinds of presentations. And so what actually occurred is humanities scholars and so they started digging through the history of America, looking for their big untold story that in a Ken Burns style of thing. And what happened was several grad students found out about the massacre. And so in the early 90s, they start showing up in Tulsa asking questions. And growing up, you know, you knew it happened, you didn't discuss it. Let me put it that way. You know, I was born 30 years after it had occurred. Yeah, it was mentioned. No, it was never discussed in my family. My mother's parents made statements about it more than, well, they're the ones who made statements about it, never heard anything from my father's parents about it or anything that happened there. My parents were 18 months old when the massacre occurred, so they didn't have any actual remembrances of it. But when you hit the 1990s and the grad students started showing up in Tulsa asking questions, people were ready to talk. And that's how everything that's going on now about the massacre and the searching and preserving the history and recognizing the survivors that were still living at that particular time. It all came from humanities scholars coming to Tulsa and prodding the locals to start talking about it. And what started them, what made them come to Tulsa was Ken Burns and the Civil War.
So where do you think the humanities are going to go in the next couple of years? You know, do you think that they're going to continue to spark these conversations, especially given our current unstable climate?
The humanities are here. It's entrenched. As I said, you don't necessarily recognize it as the humanities. People may not necessarily say, oh, that's a humanities issue, but it's here. You know, I mean, just this week, when you're talking about all of the children that are coming through the southern border, okay, and they're saying that this is a crisis and how do we deal with this, and the response of the Secretary of Homeland Security to the members of Congress was that there are moral and there are ethical issues associated with dealing with unaccompanied children and our culture and what are we going to do with them in our country. The answer to those questions are the humanity. Ethics is the humanity. Okay. How we respond to that is the humanity. There has been this incredible outpouring of books describing the history, bringing into context the part that I always love, the biography side of things. You're seeing more biographies being turned out. The reality of the matter is the musical Hamilton is a marriage of the humanities and the arts. That, Ron Chernoff, as a scholar doing a book about Alexander Hamilton that Lynn Miranda read, okay, it stirred up in him the creation of the musical. So is it here? It's here. You might not call it the humanities. You might not realize what it is, but that's exactly what happened. A scholar's book about a little discussed founding father of America turns into this super popular musical. If you, Hamilton has an app. Every day it has new trivia. The trivia that's there, they're humanities questions, they're history questions. Yes, the answer to your question is, yeah, it's here. It's definitely here. Part of our problem, part of the challenge, is the thing that I was actively involved in, is that public funding of it, and the remaining commitment for the public funding of the humanities, the realization of how important that is. Whenever I make a lobby visit with a member of Congress about the humanities, they go, oh my God, $32 million is an incredible amount of money to spend on the humanities. And I kind of, you know, we kind of go, well, that only pays for one bomb on a jet fighter. You know, no, it's not that much money. Okay. Don't build one jet fighter. Okay. You can fund the arts and the humanities in the United States of America. We would have those kinds of presentations and discussions. You know, $32 million isn't a lot of money. Okay. In the grand scheme of things, and money that the United States government hands out each year. So, you know, when I would get those kinds of arguments, you know, I kind of go away. Yeah, it, again, $32 million to the state humanities councils in the United States of America. You know, one of our dollars generates 100 other dollars of support. Those kinds of arguments. So, yeah, we're going to have to continue to have those kinds of arguments. I am totally supportive, committed with regard to Oklahoma, because like I said, when I jumped in and, you know, checked out the history of the National Endowment for the Humanities and what the Oklahoma Humanities Council was, and to realize that when the thought of engaging in public humanities funding and taking money from the federal budget and sending it to each of the states every year to support the humanities, when that entire concept came into being and they were trying to figure out how do we prove that this works and that this is something that should be done, that you know, the people that were involved in the startup of the National Endowment, they're looking at 50 states and where do we start? And when it turns out that the answer to that question was, well, we can start in Oklahoma, and that Oklahoma was one of the original humanities councils, that there was this strong feeling that, yeah, Oklahoma is a good place to start and prove that this is a worthwhile expenditure of federal dollars. You know, that became very important to me. And so to look at that and that particular environment, to realize, you know, you're looking at, well, for example, John Hope Franklin, who of course was born here in Oklahoma, who actually is a childhood friend of my dad's, that's part of the support that you have and the opportunity that you have, that you get somebody like John Hope Franklin, who would come back to Tulsa and was very supportive. And you know, once the recognition of the massacre became important, that he was an important figure in all of that. On a very personal and selfish level, very early, when I was on the board of the endowment, you would have humanities lectures, and one lecture was scheduled with John Hope Franklin. And since I was on the humanities board, I took my parents and we had front row seats for the lecture of presented by John Hope Franklin. So yeah, that got extra nod, especially from my dad, that he got front row seats to watch such a renowned individual who had been one of his playmates growing up, to be there at the lecture that he presented. And for me, it was special in the sense of watching my dad when he was with John Hope Franklin. I mean, when I saw them together, it was like they were kids on the block again. So yeah, that's all what's part of making the humanities special and important, you know, especially here in Oklahoma.
So you say that the humanities are here, you know, they influence everything, you know, including Hamilton, but nobody really knows what the humanities are. How do you think we should go about teaching people what the humanities are so they can recognize it in their daily lives?
Well, I mean, that's basically what we do is, you pull people aside. You went, hey, did you enjoy that? And they go, yeah. And you go, that's the humanity. That's basically what we have to do. Okay. That was always part of what we were doing. It's just, as I said, virtually impossible to explain. So you have to support things that are humanities, that you actually support scholars, that, while they're writing those books, that people are going to love. And after they've kind of gone, you kind of go, well, did you really enjoy that? And they're going, well, yeah. And they're going, well, that's the humanities, and this is why we need funding for it. That's about the only way. That was the only thing I could do whenever I was talking to a member of Congress. This is why you should do this. This helps preserve and then tell the story of our community. That is the humanities. That's how you do it. That's how you have those discussions of that core thing of what's right and what's wrong and why should we do this. I guess about the only thing that you can do is, grow advocates like me, who jumped in there totally. In my case, I jumped in there for 15 years and had a great time doing it because it was just human creativity is energized by the exposure to the arts and the humanities. That's where creativity comes from. That's where, imagination, that's where the things you didn't know you needed, come from that exposure to the humanities and also to the arts. That's why it's really important. One of the great challenges right now is everyone's into STEM and science, technology, and mathematical education. But you still need the arts and the humanities because that's where creation boils up in the human mind from being stirred by the exposure to the arts and to the humanities.
Okay. So what do the humanities mean to you personally?
What do you mean?
How have they affected your life, especially with your work on the board? Have they changed any of your perspective, especially once you've gotten involved?
Well, here was the whole thing. Like I said, I grew up loving biographies. And being on the humanities board, I found out where biographies came from. How do you have biographies? Well, that was what we were funding with regard to the grants that were coming in when we were supporting the academic, they're the ones that are going off and researching the diaries, the papers, visiting the homes of individuals, talking to people. If you're dealing with something that's contemporaneous, maybe you talk to somebody who actually knew them or actually witnessed things about them. But if you're talking about the history of it, you're searching for papers and diaries of them, the person that you're doing the biography about. The thing that I discovered when I got on the board was where biographies came from. To be perfectly honest, I had studied the humanity. You know, I'd gone through college. I'd gone through law school. And I didn't even understand what I personally had studied until I had gotten involved on the board. That's where I kind of went, oh, that's how we actually had academics come in and they're explaining how the biographies that I loved get created. That turn into the books that kids like me would read and go on from there. So it was more of a discovery and enlightenment on my side during the years that I was involved. It was kind of going, oh, that's what that is. That's how that comes into being. Boy, I wish I had known that sooner. I think we kind of need to do a better job about that. But actually, if you look at the programming with regard to public broadcasting, the PBS, OETA, you see more and more of it is a humanities-based type of program. It's there. As I said, it's just a subject that's really hard to explain. It's more like put it in front of somebody. Do you like this? Yes. Well, guess what? That's the humanities.
Okay, then. So through your work on the board, have you been able to see any specific benefits from your work? You know, have you seen more people of color receiving grants from the humanities since you joined?
Well, I haven't been actively involved for about 20 years. My period of time with the board was in the 80s and the 90s. So I'm not necessarily directly aware. I do kind of see an indication, I'd say the message isn't totally out there as clearly. You have the things about pulling together, well, for example, about the race massacre, the desire to pull together the museum pieces. I don't know. I mean, right now there's an exhibit that's available that of pictures that have been discovered of people living in North Tulsa after the massacre, what it was like, how they were living. What the humanities is and what they fund are things like discovering and preserving those kinds of pictures and also curating those kinds of exhibitions, that get presented in museums. The other thing that you will have is the opportunities of creating traveling exhibits. There was one instance that I was really intrigued by. We funded one of these traveling exhibits and when I say it's a traveling exhibit, what it would frequently be is you have like a multi-fold paneled that, you know, could stand on its own. On each side of the panels would be, you know, the description of something, the pictures, that history story, and that kind of thing. And where you might ordinarily say, well, something like that might be in a library or might be in a museum. For this particular community, they got the major bank in the community to agree to allow that traveling exhibit to be set up in their lobby, so that when, you know, people came in doing their banking, they saw this traveling exhibit that was about something that was about their community. You know, that's part of all of the outreach that takes place there. I'm seeing more and more people of color who are actually doing what I would call humanities projects, humanities-based projects and activities. I would hope that they are realizing and taking the opportunity to apply to entities like the Oklahoma Humanities in order to get funding. As I said, the council is providing seed funding. It requires a match. It's one of those instances where if you get a few dollars from them, it gives a person an opportunity to go get contributions from other sources. It can be in-kind contributions, you know, an office supply store, you know, provide the paper or you know, for making sure that a particular project is put together. I see more humanities type activities. I hope they are having access to and actually receiving the full breadth of the resources that are available.
So as we slowly near our time together, I just want to kind of bring it kind of big picture and ask you, what is the value of the humanities?
Well, as I said before, as I have discovered, that's where creativity, that is where innovation comes from. One of the arguments that we made at the time that I was involved in the board is that businesses need to actually have exposure to the humanities as part of their function. If you have a business that relies upon your employees being innovative, being creative, you know, reading books, having history, exposure to history, literature, it churns that part of the brain where you find that innovation, when you find that creativity. It's not just the humanities, it's also the arts. You know, people frequently spoke of the fact that Albert Einstein indicated that playing music was very important to him, because, you know, we don't necessarily know how the human brain works, but that exposure, that opportunity to have that discussion, you know, part of what's going on right now Well, if you're talking about even the most recent things that you're saying, attacks that are coming upon people currently of Asian descent, part of that type of activity of attacks comes from not necessarily being familiar with a particular people's or culture or their history. That this entire process of knowing other people's experiences and lives and histories and where they come from, when I went away to college, for example, the other Black students that were at my college were primarily from the East Coast. Their experience of being Black was entirely different from my experience, having grown up in Oklahoma with the history and the legacy of Black Wall Street. You know, that my family, my parents' childhood was the rebuilding and everything. I knew when I went to college, I didn't fit in. And I had a hard time trying to explain to the others as to why I wasn't like them. And the principal reason was that 50 years ago, there wasn't generalized discussion or knowledge about the race massacre here in Tulsa. And that who I am, you know, is from my family moving on from that massacre. Their focus was primarily upon the history of Black people coming from Africa and the history of Black people in Oklahoma. Was that I grew up was about the all Black towns, was about the fact that after the Civil War, Oklahoma, there was discussion about freed slaves having their own state, and actually the land in Oklahoma could possibly have been that state. But at the very least, what had occurred was Oklahoma had the largest number of all Black communities in the United States of America. That I didn't grow up in a community with ghettos. I grew up in a state that I didn't understand the word ghetto because there are no ghettos in Oklahoma. They were all Black communities. So the future of the humanities, I mean, we are very ripe and very open to questioning, you know, as I said, that question of why. Lots of people are asking why in lots of ways. And so, yes, there's a definite future for the humanities because, as I said, that's where you find the answers to the whys. That's where you find the answers to the question of who are you? Who am I? We may need to do a better job of pointing out to people that this is the humanities, this is how you do it. But the humanities are essential. Yes, they'll be here.
Okay, I believe that's about all I have for you today. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we end?
No, outside of the fact that, as I said, I was always proud of the fact that Oklahoma was one of those first states where when people were asking the question of how do we do this, How do we have the public financial support for the humanities? Where do we prove that this can work? I'm extremely proud of the fact that the state of Oklahoma was chosen, that what it has was the Oklahoma Humanities Commission, then became the Oklahoma Humanities Council, and now it's OK Humanities, that it still exists, it has continued to function. It has continued to serve the state for all of these years. And I'm very proud of the 15 years that I got to be actively involved in it. And I sincerely hope that there will be those in the future who will also jump in and continue to preserve the role of the Oklahoma State Council in supporting the humanities in the state of Oklahoma.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking time to sit down with me today.
Sure. It's been my pleasure.
Okay. Thank you.